Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, yeah. All right, folks. While the theme music cues up, we'll start talking right now. You're listening to the C. Robert Jones Situation Report. The call-in number is 347-884-8500. And in just a minute, we'll kick this show off. We'll get it started the right way. Son of Islam, son of America, President of the United States, our Commander-in-Chief, Commander of the Armed Forces, arguably the most powerful man on the planet right now, President Barack Hussein Obama. He's the man right now. He says that his job isn't finished. He's got 5 more years to go. Not sure if he's including this year, which is well underway. Maybe he's just rounding the number off. Maybe he's just, you know, it's like when person says, hey, give me a second. And it's like 5 minutes. Where did that ever come from anyway? Give me a second. I'll get with you in a second. I guess people have become so impatient that a second is supposed to be about a minute, 2 minutes, 3 minutes. I myself can't stand it when somebody says, hey, I'll be with you in a second. Since when did a second become such a very long, long time? When? Barry, in his own words, college acquaintance.
If you listen to only one interview in your entire lifetime, about this president, you might want to listen to this one. And here's why. The gentleman we are about to say hello to knew Barack Obama back in 1980. Why is that so significant? Because we know nothing about this man. We don't have health records. We don't have a birth certificate. We don't have college records. We have nothing. Who knew him? Where are his friends? Where are his acquaintances from back then, 30 years ago? Well, we have one man who himself was a Marxist back in 1980. He had just graduated from Occidental College and was attending grad school elsewhere. But his girlfriend attended classes with Barack Obama. And Christmas break 1980, they all got together. And joining us now is Dr. John C. Drew. He's a grant writing consultant from Laguna Niguel, California. Hello, Doc. How are you, sir?
Oh, hi, Steve. I'm really honored to be on the air with you today.
Well, the honor's mine. First of all, I want people to know, I mean, do you have any axe to grind here? I mean, do you dislike Obama for any reason? I mean, is there any reason you're coming forward? I know you tried to come forward early, and we'll get to that. But you're saying that when you knew Barack Obama, he talked as a Marxist would speak, and he praised the Soviet Union, and he had problems with America. Tell me why you are speaking out about this.
Well, I'm one of those people that I agreed with the young Barack Obama. I was a Marxist myself in the fall of 1980. But over time, my opinion changed, especially as I worked on my doctoral dissertation, and I looked at the relationship between child labor reform and the rise of welfare programs for children in the U.S. And I just realized that the Marxist model didn't make any sense based on my experience. So I moved over. I became a Republican in the mid-'80s, and, you know, I've been an active Republican partisan. But I can explain the intellectual development that I went through. And,
we don't have time for that because most of the people are interested. No offense, Doc, but
no
most
problem.
Of the people are interested in Obama and what he had to say. And if there's time, I'll definitely get to the process, or maybe we'll have you back another time. But let's talk about it. So it's Christmas time, 1980. Your then-girlfriend attends classes at Occidental with Obama. You graduated from Occidental. You all get together around the Christmas time. You go out to dinner. You come back to the house. Obama drives up with his Pakistani roommate, a guy named Mohammed Hassan Shandu, and that's important because we're going to mention him later about his recollection of all this. But by the way, I should mention Ronald Kessler of Newsmax did a fine job in bringing all this to light. So what's it like? You're sitting around. There's young Barack Obama. By the way, he wasn't Barack Obama then. What was he, Barry?
No. He told me to call him Barry at the time.
Okay, so there's Barry Obama. And tell me why you believe that that he was a Marxist back then.
Okay. Well, my most vivid memory is how insistent he was in arguing a Marxist-Leninist point of view. I was arguing a more moderate Marxist view that just said that even though a lot of Marx's ideas were correct, it was implausible that we would ever see a revolution led by the working class to overthrow the elites. And Obama did not buy that at all. He made a very principled, dedicated, impassioned argument that, in fact, a real revolution was coming, and that, in a sense, we should all get on board and prepare ourselves physically and emotionally for that revolution.
And he believed that the people would rise up, and it would be the workers who would overthrow those in charge and those with wealth. Now, did you sense that he, even back then, either believed or maybe he thought had reason to believe that he would be a part of this revolution?
Oh, that was assumed. We assumed that there was going to be this huge revolution, and after it was over, we would be the guys on top. You know, we would be the guys making.
All right, but that's you. That's we. You guys collectively. But did you sense from him the narcissism that I see today? Was he speaking as one of the people, in your view, that was going to either pull it off, help pull it off, or emerge from it all?
I didn't think he saw himself as a leader of that effort. The way I look at it, I was kind of the young, you know, peace-loving Bill Ayers of Occidental College by the time I went back there. And I think he saw himself maybe more in a secondary role. He didn't strike me as that ambitious or that studious at the time.
Yeah, and so okay, so he wasn't ambitious at the time, but the revolution that he saw coming, this fit in with some other remarks he made about the United States, where you say that you believe that Obama perceived America as the enemy. In what sense?
He definitely saw America as the enemy. He believed that the ruling elite had rigged our economic system so that it caused people to be poor, and it was immoral and it was wrong. And the only way you could tip things back so that we all could enjoy a more prosperous lifestyle was to redistribute the wealth.
Well, so he used that term back then, or something of that nature.
That was the gist of being a Marxist at the time. And the thing I remember most vividly is when I would contradict him and say that, you know, that wasn't in the cards. It didn't slow him down.
It didn't slow him down. We're talking to Dr. John C. Drew, who is a grant writing consultant now in Laguna Niguel, California, who knew Barack Obama, had occasion to sit down with him back in 1980 when Obama was at Occidental College. And John Drew, who was a Marxist at the time, believes that Obama was a Marxist. He also, in addition to – by the way, before I get to the Soviet Union, did he believe that the problem – you say he viewed America as the enemy for the reasons you stated. Did he get racial in any sense? Was it because – you know, America treats its poorly, or it's you know, it's bottom class poorly. Was there a racial inference or racial specifics at all?
Well, that's the funny thing that I'm still trying to work out in my mind, because I have to say truthfully that I did not see in the young Barack Obama any hatred of white people. I didn't notice any racial animosity in what he was doing. My sense of him is that he was a pure Marxist socialist, and I didn't see him thinking in terms of race. And so I just think that's surprising, you know, given what he wrote in Dreams of My Father. But it never once occurred to me that he had any animosity towards white people.
Right, because in Dreams of My Father, he did express that animosity.
Yeah, a profound, you know, yes. Like he tells that story about the black guy that peels his own skin off.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
But I just didn't, I saw no evidence of that in the young Barack
Obama. All right, let me ask you about the comments regarding the Soviet Union. And we should point out this is all taking place. What was your exposure to Barack before we get to the Soviet? Was it that one night after dinner, or was this a couple of times within the Christmas vacation in 80, or what?
Well, it was the one night Christmas vacation, and then I saw him again at a party in June in Eagle Rock, California. What's crucial, I think, for me to get across, though, is that Barack Obama was part of a larger cultural system, and I had been one of the leaders. I actually established the Marxist Student Association at Oxy in 1976. I did a thesis on Marxist economics, and I was the founder of the anti-apartheid movement on campus. So for my girlfriend at the time to tell me that Barack Obama was one of us was highly significant.
Right. All right. Now,
and very unusual for a sophomore at Oxy.
On to the Soviet Union.
Okay.
While he considered the American elites and America as the enemy, you say that he had some kinder things to say about the Soviet Union.
Yeah, we all saw the Soviet Union as perhaps a better model of where the United States would go. And you see the same thing in Alice Palmer's comments after she visited the Soviet Union and took part in, you know, one of their preliminary sessions. There was a sense that the Soviet Union was a more advanced society, and even though it had made mistakes under Stalin, there was still greater equality over there, and it was a better model for us than what we saw with our existing U.S. government.
So what did he say? What do you remember him saying about it?
I don't remember any particular words on that, Steve.
You weren't quoted here, but you did in the article written by Ron Kessler, you said that, and I'm not trying to put words in your mouth, but just comment on what he wrote. He said that you remember that he thought that perhaps the Soviet Union was misunderstood and was doing a better job for its people than most realize. Is that accurate?
I would say no. And I think it was more that was the general milieu of the moment.
Okay.
So I wouldn't want to be on record.
Okay. Well, you kind of are in the piece, so I'm glad you cleared that up.
Okay. I'd go to my grave saying that he was arguing Marxist-Leninism.
Oh, no. I believe that. Now, a couple of other things here. You talk about his friend, Mohammad Hassan Shandu.
Yes.
I'm John Drew. I'm a political scientist. I did my honors thesis at Occidental College on the topic of Marxist economics. I had a chance to meet the young Barack Obama.
All right, and we're back with the C. Robert Jones Situation Report. So here we have it. Now, to be fair, by the way, you're listening to the C. Robert Jones Situation Report. I'm your host, Dr. C. Robert Jones. we had a little bit of a problem with our theme music tonight, so we didn't play it. So let's get this party started the way we usually do. Today's date, February 23rd, 2012 AD. Beautiful Old Town Alexandria, right across the Potomac from Washington, D.C. United States of America, planet Earth, third planet from the sun. On November 4th, what it all really boils down to is the future of our country. And here's why. when I started this radio show a little more than a year ago, I wasn't thrilled about Barack Obama's presidency. But it was hardly a grave concern to me. I didn't like his track record. I didn't like his lack of meaningful experience. I thought he flip-flopped too much on some key issues. I was annoyed by the open bias of the mass media. Worst case, I thought it'd be 4 years of a demagogue with strong left views. Not too harmful. I mean, after all, Jimmy Carter didn't do any real lasting damage. We can live through that, I said. Countries swing back, swing from right to left and back all the time. It's a cycle. I talked about it on Annie's show a couple of days ago. This is how democracies work. We swing to the far left, and then the pendulum swings back to the right. It happened numerous times throughout our democracy, throughout our republic. You can easily see it. Just a few weeks ago, I wanted to keep it light and funny. I pointed out things like the fact that the change, the VP pick, had been a senator for 35 years, but the guy wanted change. But I also looked into then, you know, Senator Obama's past and his recent actions. And I started to realize that we've been dealing with something entirely different. Something that America has never seen, or at least not on such scale. It's been almost like unclogging a sink. You open it, you take something out, then you take more. And what starts coming out after that makes you wish you'd never opened the damn sink in the first place. Forget change. How about close relationships with people involved in international terror? Or the laser-sharp focus on indoctrinating our children? Obama theme songs, Obama's Lord, Obama's God, all hail Obama. Or the laundry list of every modern-day tyrant openly expressing support for our president, Hugo Chavez, just to name one. Or the persistent suppression of free speech. Or going for 20 years and bringing children into a church that openly promotes hate of white people, just as openly supporting Hamas and condemns our own country on a regular basis, or campaigning for radical Islamic ties. A government that threw a stable country into a bloody mess. Or close ties with people who led an organization that unapologetically bombed the U.S. Capitol. I'm talking about Bill Ayers. Bill Ayers also bombed police stations, the Pentagon, and who were at one time on the FBI's most wanted list, having coffee and tea, just hanging out. Or vote fraud of monstrous proportions with Acorn. Or accepting a flow of donations from unidentified foreign sources. Praise Obama. Praise Obama.
Peggy Joseph took her daughter out of school early Wednesday for this. Her emotions ran high following Obama's speech.
It was the most memorable time of my life. It was a touching moment. Because I never thought this day would ever happen. I won't have to worry about putting gas in my car. I won't have to worry about paying my mortgage. You know, if I help him, he's going to help me.
That sentiment flowed throughout this great nation, where people were expecting that if they elected a president who believed in spreading the wealth, well, you know the rest. On the afternoon of April 1st, 1983, Barack Obama, who was then a senior at Columbia University, made his way into the Great Hall of Manhattan Cooper's Union to attend a socialist scholars conference. There, Obama discovered his vocation as a community organizer, as well as a political program to guide him throughout his life. Now, the conference itself was not a secret, but it held a secret, because it was there that a demoralized and frustrated social movement largely set aside strategies for nationalization and turned increasingly to local organizing as a way around the Reagan presidency. In the early 1980s, American socialists discovered what Saul Alinsky had always known. Community organizing is a euphemism behind the advocates for radical visions of America that could advance their causes without the bothersome label of socialist, which would draw adverse attention to their efforts. Now, why is this important? Why is this all important? Does it matter whether the president is a socialist or not? Well, of course it does. Obama believes in spreading the wealth, the redistribution of wealth. And quite frankly, folks, that's not good for anyone. The redistribution of wealth means that he, the president, and his administration means to take, to steal, through taxes and other means, from you in order to give to someone else. Now, I know a lot of you out there say, well, all he really wants to do is tax the wealthy. He wants them to pay their fair share. And then he wants to use those funds that the rich exploited the masses to get, to benefit citizens everywhere. It's a noble thing. It's a good thing. Because we know those evil corporate giants who make all of that money, anyone over $250,000 a year, don't deserve it. They didn't earn it. And so what if they did? There are other people who need that money more. There are those who need more. I made the analogy not so long ago. I own two vehicles. But, of course, I can only drive one vehicle at a time. Under Obama's idea of redistribution, I should be made to give up one of those vehicles so that a family that has no vehicles could have a way to travel back and forth, wherever the hell they want to go. Because to whom much is given, much is to be expected. And so what if I work and I earn the necessary wealth to acquire the things that I want? It doesn't matter. You've got two vehicles, Mr. Jones. You don't need two vehicles. The government is going to confiscate one of your vehicles so that that family of four over there will have something to drive. That's where we're headed. And if you think that it'll just stop with people like me, you're dead wrong. Because it'll eventually get to you, any of you out there that has just a little bit more than the next person. You will be told that you've got too much, and that for the good of the state, for the good of Americans, you should be made to give up those things. Things that you've earned, that you've worked for. And someone said, how about those gas prices? 2020 Radio Network is in the house. He asked the question, how about those gas prices? Well, we'll get to that. We'll get to that in just a few minutes. Now, we have a call on the line. Caller, you're on with the C. Robert Jones Situation Report.
Hi, Doc Jones. This is Karen in Idaho.
Karen, is that you?
Yeah.
Where have you been?
I have been out where it's quiet and peaceful, and I don't have a phone, and it's very quiet.
And you've got some goats, don't you?
Yeah.
You should be made to get... How many goats do you have now?
11.
11?
Yeah.
How many goats do you need, Karen?
Well, it depends on what I'm using them for.
Well, what do you use them for?
Well, I have one milk goat.
Okay, one goat for milk. You need that. But No. The FDA says that you can't just milk the goat. You're not drinking that, are you?
Well, yeah.
No. Hell no. You can't drink that goat's milk. You have a permit for that?
No, but it's for personal use. Pet
I don't know. I don't know. We'll have to see what the government has to say about that.
The government says I can only use it for pet use. But so what I do inside my home is none of their business.
All right. Well, we'll see about that. So now we've got some folks in the chat room who don't have any goats. So,
yeah.
And there are a couple of folks in there said they need a couple of those goats. Now, where exactly in Idaho are you? Because Thundercracker here in the chat room wants to know.
I'm not in Idaho anymore.
Oh, you're just Karen from Idaho. Well, where are you? Well, we can get our hands on some of those goats.
I am in Washington State now.
Washington State. Okay, Thunder, Karen is no longer in Idaho. She is in Washington State right now with the goats.
Mm-hmm.
All right, okay. So, Karen, would you mind holding on for just a minute? We need to get back to you and talk about these goats. Now, are you making goat cheese with that goat, or what are you doing?
Yeah.
All right, well, the government... You know what? I'm not gonna rat you out.
Thank you.
But you should know that having unauthorized goats is probably gonna be a crime right now. Now Thunder wants to know where you used to live in Idaho. Approximately.
A little town called Orofino.
Orofino. Did I pronounce that right?
Yes.
Okay.
It's in Central Idaho.
All right. Now, you packed up the goats and you left and you went to Washington State. Is that correct?
Yeah.
All right. Okay. And now, are you eating the goats or are you...
No. No, I'm not into curry goats.
Okay, because curry goat's pretty damn good. My mouth is watering right now.
Well, you're going to have to treat me to curry goat sometime so I'll know.
Okay.
But I told you one time that I pack with my goat.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so it's like a survival thing that I'm prepared for.
So you're prepared to chow down on one of the goats if need be.
Necessary, yes.
Okay, do the goats have names?
Absolutely.
Okay, so you would chew on little Irving's leg or a shank or something, a goat shank or what? Would you chew on it? Would you have some new potatoes on the side with little Irving or Joe or
Bruce?
Bruce? So you'd have Bruce. You'd have Bruce in a big pan. Obviously, there'll be one of those big tinfoil pans in the oven. You'd bake them, right?
Yeah, you could fry the meat like you do deer.
Right. Okay, so would you fry it or would you bake one? I mean, would you put an apple in its mouth or?
Oh, heavens, no.
Or what, a potato? A big baking potato?
From Idaho, yeah.
All right, and of course, an Idaho baking potato in the goat's mouth, Bruce, with some new potatoes on the side, maybe those little baby carrots, maybe. Anybody hungry? Because I am. Damn. Anyway, hold on.
Have your raspberry sherbet and leave my goats.
I tell you what, 2020 says that he needs some goats, and Obama's probably going to make you give up a couple of those goats to some hungry families down the road. So if I were you, I'd just claim that you have a few goats less than you actually have.
Okay.
All right, we'll be right back. Stay right there. Don't go anywhere. All right. Karen in Idaho's got some goats. She chows down on them. Oh, no, she doesn't. But she does use the goat's milk. All right, we're going to take a short break. We'll be right back, and then we'll get to Obama being a Marxist. Indonesia, Muslim schools, Christianity, all of that. And oh yeah, we're going to talk about those high gas prices and what's really going on, because I got the scoop. I got it. Anybody remember that show, That's My Mama, where Isaac from the Love Boat would come in dressed in all leather, which is a disturbing thought at this time, watching Isaac from the Love Boat sashay or strut into the barbershop wearing leather from head to toe, saying, I got it, and I got to report it. Does anybody remember that? That's My Mama. Yeah, that's the name of the show. Anyway, I got it. And I'm not wearing any leather either, but I got to report it. And I'm going to report it to you. The real reason why those gas prices are so high. All right, we'll take a short break, and we'll be right back. You're listening to the C. Robert Jones Situation Report.
Without God, there is no virtue, because there's no prompting of the conscience. Without God, we're mired in the material, that flat world that tells us only what the senses perceive. Without God, there is a coarsening of the society. And without God, democracy will not and cannot long endure. If we ever forget that we're one nation under God, then we will be a nation gone under. If I could just make a personal statement of my own.
All right, we're back. I miss him too. Before we get into the Son of Marx, which I know a lot of you have tuned in to hear about, I promoted it all day long. Let's talk about the real reason why gas prices and energy prices are so high. I'll get right to the point. The price of gasoline is so high because the Obama administration wants energy costs to be high. Obama said so himself. He said so. Is anybody surprised?
You know, when I was asked earlier about the issue of coal, you know, under my plan of a cap and trade system, electricity rates would necessarily skyrocket. Even, you know, regardless of what I say about whether coal is good or bad, because I'm capping greenhouse gases, coal power plants, you know, natural gas, you name whatever the plants were, whatever the industry was, they would have to retrofit their operations. That will cost money. They will pass that money on to consumers.
There we go. You see, the Obama administration wants, no, they have a goal of outfitting every American with a smart car or an electric car, clean energy, or a car, a vehicle where they're phasing out fossil fuel vehicles. It's the reason why the Keystone Pipeline didn't go through. That's the real reason. Obama is pushing for his version of clean energy. And if we won't go willingly, he will force us to do so by making the price so high that we won't have any choice. Take cigarettes, for example. I remember when cigarettes were 50 cents a pack. Yeah, I'm just that old. I remember when they rose to $2 a pack. A carton of cigarettes right now, what does that cost? I can't even imagine what it costs now. Because the powers that be have bored smoking. Smoking is dirty now. Smoking is nasty. We've been conditioned to believe that smoking not only kills, which it does, but that it's a dirty, filthy habit. And because there are those who don't want us to smoke, those people in power who make the laws, who make policy, they raise the price up so that it makes it very difficult to want to go out and purchase that item. Well, that's a good example, in my opinion, of what's happening with gas prices. Obama wants gas prices to necessarily skyrocket because he wants to retrofit car companies to build smart cars, electric vehicles. Obama told the San Francisco Chronicle in January 2008 that under my plan of cap and trade, electricity rates would necessarily skyrocket. President Obama and his circle want higher energy prices. That includes the gas you need to drive to work, pick up your children, and go to the store. It includes the gasoline and diesel that powers the trucks and trains that bring essential goods to your neighborhood. An ABC News report yesterday said that we could see $5 per gallon at the pumps all over the country by Memorial Day. A frightening blog post by Marathon Pundit today has various quotes by Obama administration officials, which demonstrate the real goals of raising the cost of energy for Americans. One of those quotes is from Energy Secretary Stephen Chu. And I quote, "Somehow we have to figure out how to boost the prices of gasoline to the levels in Europe," end quote. Chu said that in December 2008. Mr. Chu has called for gradually ramping up gasoline taxes over 15 years to coax consumers into buying more efficient cars and living in neighborhoods closer to work. So, it's all part of a plan. And it's brilliant. Except for one thing. We're not a nation of sheep. We're not a nation of followers. We don't go along with a plan, with the status quo. We're a nation of individuals. We're not a European country. We believe in rugged individualism, and I'll say it, if I've said it once, I've said it 26 times. We are hardwired for freedom and individualism. We're not going to go quietly into that good night. We will drive our SUVs and our gasoline cars if it's $50 a gallon. And those of you who make that price that high will have hell to pay on your hands. Do you think for 1 minute on God's green earth that I'm not going to drive my SUV, that I'm going to sell it and get one of those tiny little smart cars I can fit in my pocket or my bathroom? You think I'm going to give up my fine Nissan Maxima or my fine Pathfinder and drive one of those tiny little cars? No. What I'm going to do is organize and get a whole lot of people with me who love our vehicles, our big-ass gas-guzzling vehicles, to go down to the polling place and vote your ass out of office. And put in somebody who will allow me to drive my gas-guzzling vehicle unmolested. That's how it's going to work, Mr. Chu and Mr. Obama. You can kiss my ass. You're not going to coach me into driving a smart car. It ain't going to happen. And most Americans who are, especially men, real men, aren't going to drive that little candy-ass vehicle. Hell, I'd rather walk. I'd rather walk than drive that damn thing. Who do these people think they're effing with? This is the United States of America still. And if I want to drive a gas-guzzling super tanker truck, then that's what I'm going to do. This is why this clown Obama and his minions, they got to go. They got to go. November. Get the hell out of here. All right. Now, let's move on to Mr. Obama. Mr. Marxist, son of Islam, let's get real. Son of Marx, an article by Jeffrey Folks from The American Thinker. That's where I got the title from. That's what we're talking about right now. Aside from his childhood attendance at the Muslim school in Indonesia, a school that was selected for him by his parents, Obama has never known or had much interest in Islam. Nor, someone would say, has he demonstrated a sincere interest in Christianity. Obama's attendance at Trinity United Church in Chicago may have had more to do with political opportunism than religious devotion. I have said this many times. American Citizen has said so many times. That it wasn't about going to church and fellowship. It was about opportunity. We have a call on the line. Caller, you're on with the C. Robert Jones Situation Report.
Yeah, Doc, once again, you're hitting the nail on the head.
There he is.
I tell you what, yeah, it's me. If you could go ahead and make your point about Obama's formative years,
yeah,
I'd love to hear your take on it. And then I'd like to say what I'd like to say after you make your point.
All right, all right. Stay right there, Sarge. Sarge from Rapid Fire. Great show, 4:30. Weekdays, I think. Yeah.
I haven't seen.
Yep. All right. We'll be right back. Stay where you are, Sarge. All right. So, in reality, there's little evidence that Obama, as an adult, has shown much interest in any religion. So, to call Obama a son of Islam is true only in a particular sense. His paternal ancestors were members of the Muslim faith, and Obama is their descendant. That much is clear and not disputable. In truth, Obama is not really the son of any religion. His father was brought up as a Muslim, but became an atheist. His mother was a self-proclaimed atheist who attended a leftist Unitarian Universalist church as a young woman. His maternal ancestors, Stanley and Madeline Durham, who were not practicing Christians, had multiple ties to the Communist Party USA. Those are facts. As a youth, Obama was also an atheist. His actions as a young man were not those prescribed in the Quran or any other religion. He was, by his own admission, a drug user, a womanizer, an indifferent student. Had he been a devout Muslim, he would not have been any of those things. Clearly, Obama is not the son of Islam or of Christianity, but he is very much the son of Marx. When Rick Santorum referred to the president's radical environmentalism as a false theology, he was perfectly correct. Obama's religion is not Islam or Christianity, but the leftist ideology that Obama learned as a child. If anything, this radical ideology is the opposite of both Islam and Christianity, since it would supplant individual conscience and the conscience of the church, which centralized state control of all life's functions. No devout Muslim or Christian wishes to inhabit a Marxist state that would run roughshod over religious beliefs of the faithful. But this is very much Obama's goal. Within the Marxist state that Obama envisions, all sectors of the economy, all aspects of everyday life, in fact, would fall under the control of a centralized bureaucracy. This destruction of liberty is already coming to pass with the implementation of Obamacare. At the direction of a small panel of experts, standardized protocols are being constructed that will constrain the healthcare choices of every single American. When it comes time to decide upon end-of-life care, it won't be you deciding what to do with grandma. It won't be you deciding what to do with the dog. It won't be you deciding what to do with dad, what sort of care he should get. Oh, no. No. It'll be a computer. A computer program implementing the cost-benefit analysis arrived at by a secretive panel appointed by the president. Let's talk about it. You're listening to the C. Robert Jones Situation Report. Within nothing this president has done would indicate any genuine interest in religion. His feeble February 2nd performance at the National Prayer Breakfast is a case in point. His long-winded address was filled with hypothetical professions of faith, including the blatantly self-serving account of his pilgrimage visit with the Reverend Billy Graham. It would seem that Obama does not know the meaning of the word travesty, since his actions so often fall under that category. In this instance, his boastful account of his actions was a travesty of the humble and self-sacrificing faith that Reverend Graham embodied for well over half a century. Obama's remarks at that same breakfast concerning what the Bible says about the rich were just as much a charade. According to the president, Holy Scripture can be cited to support his proposals to raise taxes on the rich. God, Jesus, is telling Obama to tax the rich. And of course, given that many people think that Obama is above God, or sort of God, well, he's just playing up to the crowd. I do not recall any Bible verse that refers to a 30% levy on millionaires or a tax rate surcharge on those earning more than $200,000 per year. The fact that the president would attempt to slip this message into a national prayer breakfast is in and of itself a strong indication of where his priorities lie. This, and they do lie with prayer itself, which has nothing to do with class envy except perhaps the suppression of envy as the deadly sin that it is. Even in the midst of his national prayer breakfast address, the president could not resist advancing his class warfare agenda. Where this president has shown a great deal of interest in the wealth redistribution, following the structures of Marx, Obama constantly and reflexively frames his remarks in terms of class warfare. It seems that it is impossible for him to conceive of the American people in anything but antagonistic terms, with the rich pitted against the poor, white against blacks, bankers against borrowers, producers against consumers, young against old, women against men, God against the state. For each of these conflicts, or purported conflicts, Obama's solution is wealth redistribution. Thus, he has ordered the entire federal bureaucracy to pursue those individuals and companies that have amassed wealth and to litigate, regulate, tax, harass, cajole them into a, quote, fair, end quote, settlement that has to be reached. But the settlement, fair or otherwise, is that which will require U.S. banks to hand over as much as $40 billion to victimize homeowners and other parties. When will this intimidation end? Obama's goal, mind you, the death of capitalism. That is Obama's guiding objective, the passion that he has brought to class warfare, not just in the current reelection campaign, but throughout his presidency, is clear evidence of where his heart lies. It does lie not with Islam or with Christianity, but with Marx. Jeffrey Folks is the author of many books and articles on American culture, including Heartland of the Imagination. This is an article I have read almost verbatim, throwing in my own words here and there. If you'd like more and more of Jeffrey's works, head over to The American Thinker. The articles there are spectacular. I write for them myself on occasion. All right, let's bring our caller back in. Sarge, you're back. Any thoughts before we take off? 6 minutes left. Nope. Sarge is not available. So we're back. The call-in number is 347-884-8500. You're listening to the C. Robert Jones Situation Report. What do you think about that? Is Obama godless? Well, earlier in his administration, just a couple of months after assuming the presidency, Obama visited my alma mater, William & Mary. William & Mary is my other school. Georgetown University. There he gave a speech. He ordered in the hall to have all references to religion either removed or covered. Now, as many of you know, Georgetown is a Jesuit school. There are sculptures. There are portraits of saints and Jesus all over the place. Obama ordered that if he were going to give a speech at Georgetown, that any reference to Christianity or God or Jesus would not be shown during the course of his speech. Why is that? Why would the President of the United States openly support infanticide? We used to do shows about Obama asking whether or not the president is the Antichrist. No, he's not. He's simply a Marxist. He would like to see the destruction of the United States of America as we know it. He has said so. Numerous occasions. He has openly stated that he would like to fundamentally transform the United States of America. No, to be fair, he didn't say to a socialist state or a Marxist state. His days in office would have been numbered right then and there. He would have been voted, he would have been impeached at some point. Would have been gone by now, back to Chicago or Indonesia or Hawaii or wherever the hell he's from. Obama is a Marxist. He is a socialist. He's both of those things, all rolled into one. That much is certainly clear. The question is, can we stand 4 more years of that? You've been listening to the C. Robert Jones Situation Report. We are done for the night. We are out. Hopefully, we'll be back, God willing, not Marx willing. And you know what? We're gonna stretch this out a little bit. Monday night, we're going to talk some more about this. We're going to have this conversation again. Monday night. Be here, be square. You've been listening to the Steve Robinson Jones Situation Report. Good night, folks. God bless you. God bless the United States of America. We are out. To be son. Never fuck me. United States Marine.
When you walk through the garden, you gotta watch your back. Well, I beg your pardon. Walk the straight and narrow track. If you walk with Jesus, He's gonna save your soul. You gotta keep the devil way down in the hole. He's got the fire and the fury at His command. Well, you don't have to worry if you hold on to Jesus' hand. We'll all be safe from Satan when the thunder rolls. We just gotta keep the devil way down in the hole. Keep the devil down in
life.
God, can an amen? Can I get a hallelujah? Ready?